I'm told the number one fear people have is speaking in public. It's the one fear I don't have. Join me for the Love Speak series, where we leave fear behind and we speak love. Loving our story, loving speaking, doing what we love, loving each other, and loving ourselves. Our stories are what connect us and make us better humans. So join me and my Love Speaks friends for some stories, some laughs, some inspiration, some speaker tips, and some unexpected truth. It's the Love Speaks series, where a little bit of love goes a long way.
Welcome to the Love Speaks series. Here's your host, Sally Lou Loveman.
Such a long way. All we need is love, right? Well, welcome to the Love Speaks series. I'm your host, Sally Lou Loveman. And for those of you who know me, you know I love an audience. I love my story. So sitting here today in my podcast studio at Mystery Street Studios with my first podcast guest, I am feeling such excitement. It feels like show day. And all I can say is, hello, audience. I can see you, even though I can't see you, but I can see you. I see you in my mind. I see you like in the front row, excited, in your bright colors, and there you are. So I feel you, I see you, and I'm excited. So let's do this. This is like the best day of my life. It feels like Christmas. There is only one person I could have as my first guest, because I have been begging her to host a podcast with me that I titled Pick Up the Phone, which I'll tell you about later. She is a Peabody and Emmy Award winning director, a writer and producer in radio, television, and film. She produced at the Oprah Winfrey Show, Oprah Radio, Apollo Live, and Walt Disney Productions. In 2016, she co-produced and co-directed the documentary Maya Angelou and Still I Rise, which premiered at the Sundance Festival and went on to win a Peabody. We met in 1991 when we were both a couple of kids at a startup TV talk show that didn't last long, but luckily our friendship did. After working a 15-hour day, we would both drive home. We would get in our beds in our bedrooms, pick up the house phone. That's what we called them because we did not have cell phones, and talk for another 2 hours because we never ran out of things to say, and we still don't. So it is my great pleasure to introduce to you my first guest on the Love Speaks series, my friend, the award-winning friend, and writer, director, author, my friend, Rita Coburn. Thank you for being here, Rita. Rita, Peterhead. What you doing wearing red?
That was my song. I knew you were going to say that. You used to say that all the time at the show. And I loved it. And I love it now.
Not
like
the Oprah
you.
Show. And, not the Oprah show. Yeah. A different show, which we won't speak of.
Yeah, we won't say the name. But
I noticed that
it
wasn't in your bio. It's not in mine either.
Okay. But, you know, we've all done things, right?
It's the best.
And we know we did them, and that was good enough, and they taught us something, and we moved on. And
yeah,
people take the name of those things and attach them to us,
right,
and make an assumption that's no longer true. So
right,
it's okay for us not to say.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's so interesting that as you get older, and we're talking about midlife today, that's our topic.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for, because, you know, women, you know,
we're in the middle of things.
We got to stick it out. Yeah. We got to laugh. We have
right,
to laugh because
right,
the other alternative is to cry. So we're going to laugh. But it's funny that as we grow in our lives and in our age, those mistakes or those things that didn't happen very well are what drive us.
Yeah.
And they taught us.
We learned something from each one of them that was invaluable, even if it was, this isn't what I want to do. Because on the road to what you want, you get rid of a lot of don't wants. And
exactly,
and you get to do that. And
exactly,
you don't get to have people associate you with you, that with you for the rest of your life.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So it's good. It's good to do things you don't love or things that don't work out because it just drives you forward, which is all we can do is move forward. Listen, I just want to tell everyone listening that you are without a doubt, which is why I wanted you here first, the woman friend who makes me think the hardest and laugh the hardest. And so that's a hard thing. Like, you've got funny friends, and usually they're not deep thinkers, but you are such a deep thinker. And you have, like, when I look at you, I see all the women that came before you and all the women that will come after you. Where does that come from?
You know, I think the Black experience in America is not yet, it's not yet dissected in the way that it needs to be, but it comes from a part where we've had to make it. We've not had any choice. Mm-hmm. And we've also had to make it, if we really truly wanted to, with some dignity and some grace that we put in ourselves because it wasn't given to us. Mm-hmm. So it's been very hard won. And I think one of the things that happened in our friendship, which was the oddest thing ever.
So odd.
We're in the 90s, right, and it's not the same thing. White-Black relations aren't what they are now.
Right.
People looked at white-Black people communicating together sometimes as, what's going on there? This is odd. Like, why are they together?
Oh, I was saying it was odd for other reasons, but go on.
Yeah, but you know what? I think what I know that happened between you and I from the time that we met and I became your associate producer.
That's the weird part. That's the part that I think is funny.
But the thing about it is that we never had a race issue.
No.
We only had a, we love each other, we get along, how are you, I'm married, I got kids.
We had the same lives.
We just had us.
Yes.
And I think that was so refreshing for me in my life, because I didn't have that. I always had to build my muscle by fighting bias in this
right.
and that, to
right.
get the job, to be in the room, to do all of that.
Right.
And I never had to do that with
right.
you.
Right. Well, thank you. That meant I never even thought about it, because it just wasn't a thing that I
it
thought of.
It was never a thing.
But I have the privilege. I'm white. I don't have to fight the way you fight. So
yeah.
I think about that all the time.
And I rested with you because I never had to fight. I didn't even think about this until years later.
You were the boss. You were the boss. You don't fight with the boss. Okay?
I don't know
this
about
is
that.
The
you
thing.
Were my boss. This, so how
yeah,
was...
Exactly.
Yeah,
which
how
was
did that work?
So stupid.
Yeah.
So the fact that I was the producer and you were the associate producer makes me laugh so hard. Anyway, we won't talk much longer about that show, but the cool thing about that show, which was not Oprah, and I was there for 9 months, you were there for maybe a year or two, I forget the mm-hmm. length, but I was your producer and your boss, and it just, we were put together like roommates at college. Like,
yeah.
We
yeah.
didn't choose, it just happened. What a blessing that was.
Yay.
So I will always be grateful to that show.
Yeah, see,
for
that's
choosing
what I'm
you.
Saying. You never know what you're going to get from a situation.
Right.
But you're always going to get something as long as you stay open, as long as you learn to love yourself and love what's around you, you're going to get there.
Well,
and I think that happened for us.
For sure. And
yep.
I mean, 30 years later, something like that.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
whatever the math is, it is like we are still in that office. I
right.
mean, it's just so funny.
All the time.
And we would just talk for 2 more hours. Like, working in television is really exhausting.
Yeah.
For us to want to talk to each other again, that at night when we finally were away from each other, I think that's a testament to a friendship. And I will always know that our phone, like, I don't want to text with you. I have
right.
no interest in texting
right.
with you, because I want to hear your voice and the way you deliver a line. To me, that's what excites me. And you make me laugh. Where does your humor come from?
Again, I think that thing that you said is really good, is that you do have to laugh about things. You
mm-hmm.
do have to have what is joy, because life is not easy. And I think as you get older, you realize that you're in the middle of things. You're in the middle of your aging process. You're in the middle of your children's lives. You're in the middle of a lot of different things. And I think you have to find those moments of joy. But I find laughter something that is just, it happens, you know, and sometimes it happens inappropriately and you have to forgive
yes.
yourself for that.
Yes.
But you have to find the joy in things. And that's where I think it comes from.
Okay. So you worked for Dr. Maya Angelou. Mm-hmm. And am I saying it right? Angelo?
No,
Angelo.
But it's okay. She answered to everything.
She did not answer to everything.
Well, she answered to Angelou and Angelo. But
never her first name.
Well, she didn't like being disrespected that way.
Right.
But even Oprah would say Angelou, Angelo, you know, and it comes from her Greek husband, Angelopoulos.
Okay.
And it was cut off short to Angelo. So you think high-low.
High-low. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Angelo. So I'm going to ask you a question before we get to midlife that probably most people wouldn't ask about this, but we're talking about laughter. What did Maya Angelou do to make you laugh? What was something that she did? Like, is there anything that you remember? Because you think of her as this, just this goddess who speaks in these words that just are written for life and forever. And people,
and she,
you know,
did that. But she was she loved
funny.
To laugh.
Right.
And she would, you know, there was this thing that would happen. She was always teaching. And so let's say the housekeeper was standing behind you and I was sitting with, like you're her, and I'm sitting there.
Right.
And I did something foolish, like pull out my cell phone or something.
Right.
And she would be, excuse me, am I not enough company for you? Right. You know, something like that.
Right.
And then the housekeeper would do a little move to let me know that I got it.
Right.
And
then I
would, she would see that that happened by my eyes. And she would say, so you're making sport of Mrs. Wag. And then when she would turn, I would do the same thing to them.
Is Mrs. Wag the housekeeper?
No, Mrs. Wack was my married name
you said Wag.
At the time.
Sorry, Mrs. Wack. Right.
The thing is that she loved you so well and so completely and so honestly that you couldn't help but love her.
Did you ever have to pinch yourself?
You know, I felt like, I felt in the beginning, like, what am I going to do? You know, I'm here. And she said, Mrs. Wack is here. And she's so-so. And she's tutu. And she's all that. And pretty soon, all we're going to do is laugh and have fun. And we got to that point.
Right.
She would take me places. And we would get on her bus. And she didn't fly anymore. So she rode like a country music star.
That's funny.
Then she would want music on the bus. Like, we'd start. She loved country music. So someone would pipe in, I hope you dance, and we get on the bus, and she get on the bus
so
just
like,
like that.
Her pre-show warm-up to whatever wherever she was going.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, she always had a good time. And
I want to tell the listeners, I'm sorry for interrupting, because I realize being a first-time podcaster, some listeners, I mean, if they didn't catch the intro, you were the producer for Dr. Maya Angelou's radio show for Harpo Radio. Mm-hmm. And then you went on to co-produce and co-direct her documentary film of the story of her life.
Maya Angelou and Still I Rise.
Exactly.
It's now on Netflix, and it was done by American Masters PBS.
And if you ever feel like you need a little inspiration, please watch it. It makes you so proud to be a woman and so proud to be in her presence and so many lessons. And the fact that you did that, and remember when we were talking in the cafe years ago?
Yep.
And I said, Rita, you're the one to tell the story.
Yeah.
That was years. That was like 2010 maybe, or maybe before.
Well, we started the film on 2010. And I think you and I were sitting out having lunch, and I was telling you things that I wanted to do with my life and how I felt about her. And you said, you're going to have to do a life story on her. But that was earlier because we worked together at Harpo in 2006.
Right.
And I started the documentary in 2010.
Right.
So we talked about it
then.
Well,
you and I have a very special, besides the fact that we are twins today, we're both in our denim jackets with denim jeans. Or I think that's repetitive. That's whatever.
It is, but that's good.
We're wearing a denim leisure suit. I never do it, but I felt like doing it today. And then you walk in and you're in it, which is so funny. But I will say that we both have a great deep love for elders.
Yes.
And I remember saying
to you,
like, these stories are going to be gone. You're the one to tell it. And you did it. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is what I want to tell the listeners. Like, we had that conversation. You made a documentary film and won a Peabody. I'm going to hand you this. I said, I want to write a book. I wrote it. Hold that manuscript. I just handed her my manuscript. I just handed Rita my manuscript. Hold that in your arms. It's like you can do anything.
Absolutely.
If you speak it.
Yeah.
Just the message of the seed that you've put to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then watch it happen. It won't happen overnight or tomorrow.
No.
But it will happen. And now you are the co-director and co-producer. You don't have to read it here. Give it back to me.
but and documentary now you are the writer of your book.
Right.
But
we are
the writers of our book. I'm going to give you something biblical and something from Oprah.
Okay, good. Well, the same thing to me.
The biblical is, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Very first verse. In the beginning of all of us, we are creators. We take something and nothing and we make something out of it. That is what we do. We create our lives.
Right.
And then Oprah said, you don't get what you want. You get what you believe.
Yes.
And I think that everybody says, I want to write a book, or I want to do this, or I want to tell the stories of my elders. You have to believe that that is what you can do. That is what you need to do. And then it gets to, that is what I must do. And then you begin to do it. And you surround yourself with people who at least believe enough in you that when you want to do something, they support you. And then you weed out, stay away from, run as fast as you can from people who won't allow you to become your authentic self.
How many times did you have people roll their eyes at you?
All the time.
Right.
And some still do it. Things. I just finished a screenplay and a lot of people
you
are
did?
Like, right, you're going to have a film in the movie theaters. I'm like, yeah.
Yes, I am.
You know, and I have to believe that, think that, and work really hard on it.
So let's talk about midlife. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Our dreams never go away. Just because I'm 57, you're...
61.
61. You're so hot and cute.
say that again. Could you say
so
that?
You're so hot and cute.
Yeah.
And single.
Okay. Thanks for putting that out there.
Sure.
Okay.
Rita Coburn.com.
Yeah, yeah.
You were
yeah.
Rita Coburn Whack.
Yeah.
You are now Rita Coburn.
Right.
And I find I was blessed. I never had that fear of the biological clock ticking because I had three babies at the right kind of age. I never had trouble. It was great. And I my heart bleeds for people that are going through that struggle because it's hard. I understand that feeling now. It's not the same. It's not the same outcome, but the feeling of, oh my God, I don't have time. Time's ticking. I want to do this. I want to do this. And I want to do everything. Probably I want to do more now than I did when I was 20, 30, 40. I want to do it all. And I feel like time is running out. So now let's talk about midlife. Do you have that feeling of that time pressure?
Well, time is the last commodity. It's actually all we have.
Yes.
And we don't know how much of it we're going to get. My mother used to say, you don't know if you're going to get a teaspoon of life or a whole cup full.
Right.
So you need to do it the best that you can. And I think that, you know, I don't gloss over our circumstances. I'm 2 years out from a 34-year marriage.
Right.
And when we met and we were like puppies and we were like people that didn't think that anything bad was ever going to happen.
Right.
But I would never shake my fist at God for the bad that happened when I took all the good.
Right.
And I'm very happy to have had the experience of being married.
Right.
I'm happy for the times in my marriage that were good.
Right.
I'm glad to be out of my marriage. And I tried to hold on to it when I found out it was crumbling a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And then I realized something about myself. First off, my comeback game is strong.
It's so strong. You're blonde.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
And your name is on your jeans, on your ass.
Right. My comeback game is really strong. Always has been. But got that way from disappointments, heartaches, and the muscle that you build and the sinew and the tissue and the bones get stronger.
Right.
And you realize that you're being released from something that no longer is good for you. And you have to let it go.
I think the one thing that's universal for everyone with pain, you know, is that we know when it's worth fighting for, and we know when it's not. And it's okay. You should forgive yourself for fighting for it for those years that you weren't sure, because that's part of the process.
I think you're right.
And
I love
now
that.
You are post out of the marriage. I loved your husband. I still do. He's a wonderful man, and he's the father of your beautiful children, Christine and Lee.
Very happy with that.
And yeah, you made really beautiful children. And people who are giving back to this earth in huge ways with Christine's voice and Lee's work that he does for, I want to say, public
education
schools? Education in Philadelphia, my hometown. And so for that, you will always be grateful. But what a great place to be, because you're not gray now. You know exactly why you're out, and you can accept the good, and you can accept the bad.
And it took some time. And what I think is really important,
because time is, like you said,
the last commodity.
Exactly.
And it's all we have. And I think that what it also helped me to understand, because I really, really love women. I love all my sisters. Yeah. It helped me to understand not just people who are, I can't wait, my clock is ticking, but I have been married so long, I didn't identify as well as I might have hoped that I would have with women who were single, who had never been married and wanted to be, other women who were divorced, women who never had a chance to have children. And then being Black, some Black women were rolling their eyes and sucking their teeth and going, 34 years and you couldn't make it? We wish we had too. Like, what's your problem? Like, and so, you know, you had to get over that.
By the way, I want more of that. Please bring more of that Rita piece to this podcast.
But, you know, Wu Chow, I know you don't want all this.
Okay? I want it
I'm going to try to, you know, like kind of tap it down, keep it together. But it was a
We've
lot going on.
We've got the learned Rita, and we have the I'm going to tell you like
it is. I'm just Rita from the block.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it wasn't your story, right? It wasn't your story. Your story was you were married.
Right.
You had two kids.
Right.
You didn't think that way.
Right.
And now you are, which is, I'm sure, opening up an incredible amount of beautiful new relationships with women. And
that's you hope
the positive.
Men.
And I hope for you some men, because I know the way you are.
Yeah. Well, child, did you have to tell all that? But anyway, on that note, I'm just I'm a year out from, I just ended something that almost was something. And what I loved about that I learned about myself, and it was really painful, because I want to be loved and I want to love in a different way than I did before, which is really interesting, because I think for the time period in which I lived and the situation that I was in, I loved, but I constantly compromised myself. And I'm not hard or bitter, but I would like to be loved for the me that doesn't compromise.
Right.
That doesn't mean that maybe compromise is the wrong word to use in that sense. But I want to love and I want to be loved for the me that's here now, because this is the me that I'm living with
and
that's
feels
authentic
good to you.
That's good.
That feels home and right.
And I was able to get out much faster when I found that the relationship was not going to go in the direction I felt that it
should
go.
So you're talking about
in.
A relationship with a new man. It just ended.
Yeah.
Because you didn't feel like you felt like you were compromising again, like you did in your marriage.
Yeah, I knew. But it was a different compromise. Compromise is sneaky.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't come the same
way. Right.
So then all of a sudden you're in something and you're like, I would never do that again. Good luck. You won't never do that again, but you might
do
something else. So maybe the thing to say is, I'm going to strive to get to my authentic self and live in that place, attract people who are there, and we can make whatever we make together. And if we find out it's not working, we need to stop hurting each other more quickly.
Exactly.
And to do anything else is really kind of selfish
I also
and fearful.
Right. And I also think that that has to do with age, because we know we don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
We don't want to waste time.
I feel that.
What's exciting you right now at 62?
A number of things. Can I get my 61 a little longer? I'm 62 yet.
I'm so sorry. I told my listeners I'd make 100 mistakes.
I don't mind telling my age, but don't be giving me no extra. Okay, so what's really exciting me now is like a myriad of things. Like, I can't say exactly the documentary that I'm working on now, but the woman was born in 1897. And any Black woman born in 1897, I'm automatically in love with her because I don't know how she did it. And so so I'm working on that. I'm researching and documentarians are frustrated librarians. We love to dig and pull, but we need to go to something that's more visual, which is why we do what we do. So on the work note, that's happening for me. And then a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago, I discovered golf.
Oh, yes.
And
you told
me. Absolutely love it because I found that I'm pretty good at it.
Right.
And it gets me out in the fresh air, and it gets me out around beautiful waterfalls, geese, whatever. And I can't think of the things that bother me while I'm doing it. And I love most often to play alone, but I play with other people. So I'm meeting people. I take my clubs everywhere I go. I play in London. I play in
You travel
California.
To London with your clubs?
Well, you know, in London, I rented them, but I play wherever I go. But I take them when I'm in the U.S.
And I have a feeling you've probably met some men on the course.
Yeah, the course is a chick magnet. I mean, if you stand there with one club and act like you don't know what to do, you'll have to use it to beat people away.
Exactly.
But because very few women are out there, and so there are a lot of men out there, and it is kind of a nice place to meet people, but you also have to be careful.
Yes,
because,
of course.
Because, you know.
Of course, like
everything. Right.
You have to be careful everywhere. So, but you picked up this game at a very late in life in terms of like people golf when they're kids. And that, to me, is being brave and really, really good to yourself.
And do new stuff. That's what I think midlife is about. If you if you haven't done any new stuff by midlife, you better do some new stuff now while your body's still working, while you can do it. And that also speaks to whether it's golf or anything else. I think women need something that takes their mind away from what their issues are, what their problems are. And one thing that women need to stop doing is building, and we'll do it, but I'm just telling you, you need to hold on. We will build an entire story around an event or something that happened, and that story may not truly exist.
Yeah.
But by the time we build it, we live in it, and we live that out, and we need to try to stop that. And one of the things you do when you find something that takes your mind off of things, you think you're taking your mind off, but the mind is so miraculous. While you're resting it, I come off the golf course and I know what I want to do with the photography for the documentary or that piece that was missing. I now know what it is.
Right.
So I think that our kinetic movement and our busyness defeats us if we don't realize that we have to relax. We have to do that.
Which is why since I have been meditating, transcendental meditation, I have never been more creative. I can't stop. I've been writing, creating. It's because of that. And that's what feeds me. And I also believe in distraction. Like, you just need to get away from all of the noise and play golf. And you're not doing it so that you can have better ideas, but it serves you that when you come back, all of a sudden something is clear to you because you've distracted your mind. I also say that about fear. Like, I was never scared to speak in front of hundreds of people at the Oprah Winfrey Show because I was so distracted doing my job, being in my purpose, seating the audience, getting them in on time. I didn't even think about it. So by the time I got up on that stage, I was warmed up. I didn't even think about it. So that to me is like just like using a way to relax your mind, distract yourself with something good, of course. You don't want to be distracted by things that aren't good.
Right.
You have so many good nuggets. I just want to say, what's the best part of midlife?
Well, we always hear you reap what you sow.
Yes.
And midlife is like the fall. First off, there's three parts to that. You do reap what you sow. You reap more than you sow, and you reap later than you sow. So I'm a gardener. So if I plant one seed for tomato, I've got to wait, but I'm going to get 50 tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And so midlife is harvest time. Things are coming in. Now, there's a trick to that. If you don't like what's coming in, then you need to plant more. So if you plant mm-hmm. love around fall, you're getting a lot of love back. If you plant hate and anger and fear, that's where you'll be afraid. But then you can also continue to plant, because as long as you're here, seed time and harvest happens. It's not just in a silo. So I think that one of the things that's happening is I'm harvesting some things. I'm harvesting relationships. Mm-hmm. I'm harvesting a lot of the muscle and the resilience that I've built over time. And I feel really good about being able to be myself. And I think I practice on new people. I'm just like totally myself from the get-go.
Totally.
And then if they don't like it, then we're
on.
Good.
Yeah.
And
listen,
yeah.
Time is ticking.
And so your latter days are greater than your former because you understand how to use the time.
Exactly.
So you get more out of a little bit of time.
Right. Do you ever sit by yourself and cry or congratulate yourself? And when I say cry, I mean cry with joy. Like, I cry a lot of joy tears. Like, I'm so proud of myself. Do you ever do that? Do you ever congratulate yourself?
I congratulate myself. I pray all the time.
Right.
And I allow myself to be sad when I'm sad. I do not stop my sadness. If I am sad, if I need to mourn, if I need to grieve, I do it. I try my best not to do it too long. And I have enough people that check on me so that yes. that doesn't happen.
And that's key.
But I do allow myself to have it. I mean, if I had to mourn my marriage, there are people now that have to mourn the loss of their home in the Bahamas, the loss
right.
of loved ones. And if you don't mourn, you don't grow.
You don't grow.
So you have to mourn, but you cannot stay in the place of mourning because
right.
you're here.
Right.
And so you have to stay in that present.
I think what you just said is so important, that we have to have people who check in with us. I remember mm-hmm. you called me. I was in New York working a couple years ago. I was in my apartment where they set me up to living my fancy bougie life. And you called me and you said, I need to tell you something, Lou. You call me Lou. And you're like, my marriage is over. And it was like a big deal. I remember exactly where I was, where I was standing. And I'm so glad that you did that for this reason alone. It held me accountable. Like, I needed to check in with you. I needed to talk to you. I need to see how you were. And I think from that phone call, we'll always be friends, but I feel like I'm more in touch with you. Like, I want to spend more time with you, but we live so far away that we seem to use that as an excuse. We have busy lives, but thank you. And I think the message is that we can't assume. It's like accepting an invitation. If you invite someone to do something with you and you don't tell them how important it is, they can say no, and they'll never understand what they were missing and why it was so important to you. You have to be responsible to say, I really want you there because this, this, this.
But I also think, Lou, people need to check on the strong people around them, because the strong people, everybody says, oh, they'll be okay.
Right.
So sometimes if that's to go get coffee, or if I'm in a waiting room, I'll send out a couple of texts. You know, I'll do something to check on people that are in my life, because
yes.
you got to be a friend to have
exactly.
one. But at the same time, the strong people have to realize that you need to tell people when you're hurting.
Exactly.
And sometimes you have to tell them over again. I didn't have to with you. But the idea is, some people don't hear it because
right.
they're like, oh, they strong, they resilient.
Right.
That's okay. You know, and it's not okay.
Yeah. Like my sister, Cindy, if she told me she was hurting about something, I'd be like, wait, what? You're the strong one. I'm the weak one. I'm the one that has all the problems. You don't have problems. And that's not true. We all struggle with stuff, and we all need to remember that even though you're smiling and you look strong, it doesn't always mean that all is well. And check in on your strong friends and check in on your weak friends. Just be a good friend, like you said.
There you go.
Okay, so you talk about prayer. Do you have a daily prayer?
You know, Maya Angelou said this to me once, and now I understand what she meant. She says, I pray a lot. The Bible says, pray without ceasing. I used to say to God, like, how's anybody going to do that? Like, that's like, you wouldn't have time to do anything else. Like, what would you do that for? And now I think I understand more about what that means, because you are always thinking. A thought is a prayer. Mm-hmm. Words have power. Now, the difference is most of us, or many people, are worrying about things. But I stay in a real place of prayer and gratitude. So I say the 23rd Psalm a lot. And what's really funny about that was when I was young, I didn't understand it. And I'm not saying I completely understand it now. And I would forget parts, and sometimes I miss parts now. But I find myself really understanding that I'm made to be by still waters, that my soul needs to be restored, that I need to be on the path of righteousness, that that those things mean more to me. First, you learn the words,
because
then
you're
you
in
live
midlife.
The words. And by the time you're in midlife,
you
get more understanding
exactly.
of that. And then I have several things I do. I read Our Daily Bread most mornings. I have to admit that that was something my husband and I did together. So now I do it, but I don't do it as often. And then there's Sarah Jakes Roberts, T.D. Jakes' daughter. She and her husband, Torre Roberts, have a ministry, One L.A., and they have a lot of things online. And sometimes when I'm golfing, I have on my headsets and I listen to a sermon. I just listen.
That's awesome.
And so I spend a lot of time on my faith.
I mean, golf, you sure do. You always have, which is also, okay, so.
That's how I stay above the water here.
Right. And besides the fact that we're dressed alike, and besides the fact that we both love elders, and besides the fact that we both love a good joke and sometimes don't have a filter, I think faith has really been a part of what drew me to you. I love my faith. I am not as learned in it as you are. I am more spiritual, but I believe in God and I pray to him every day, or her. And I will say it is something I really, truly feel way more connected to humans, whether they are men or women or whoever, who have faith, whatever their faith may be. It doesn't matter what faith it is, just that we have it. In my home, we practice Christianity and Judaism, and we will practice anything because we need it. We need it. We've had a lot. My husband and I have struggled for some time now. We've been together almost 30 years. We've had some stuff. And we see a therapist who, he tells us we are doing soulful, divine work. He's holistic. He tells us we're here to help each other with our soul corrections. And there are days where I'm like, you're not telling me the truth, or you are telling me the truth. Like, oh, I get it. And so faith was something my husband was struggling with. He didn't have it. That was going to hurt our marriage. And he is working on finding it. And that is what's strengthening our marriage. Now, you and your husband both had faith. It doesn't always mean that it will be the thing that saves you, but it can't hurt you.
And I think that it can save us individually. Like, I hope the best for him. And I think that's because I have faith. And now that I'm 2 years out, now I'm not a saint, so I was mumbling all kind of things under
Nor
my breath initially, you know. But when I got to the point
of my book was so different than the title that it is. You have no idea. And it would be a bestseller. I could retire. My kids wouldn't talk to me, but or my mother-in-law.
I understand that.
But go on. Sorry.
I do. No, I just think that what happens is that once you realize sometimes the things you want to hold on to the most, you have to let them go.
Yeah.
And if they don't come back, it's because they weren't supposed to. And the further you get out from that, the more you understand it. And I'm okay with that. But we both had faith. You can question the behavior to the faith, but everybody makes mistakes and everybody does things that are wrong.
Hey, so Sunday's coming,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Sunday is coming.
Yeah.
And that is the way we have to live, because we are all here as humans and we're all going to make mistakes.
Yep.
But if we own them and we know that Sunday's coming and that we can start over, there's nothing more beautiful than that. That's just being honest.
And
true.
And I think it's okay that we're messy.
You know,
like everybody's messy.
I mean, I am super messy.
Yeah.
And I can't even imagine what life would be like all buttoned up. Mm-hmm. I don't wish the journey that I've been on recently since midlife, but I wouldn't want it any other way, because that's who I am. Messy means
we learn from it. And
it.
That doesn't mean that you're a mess.
It means
that sometimes you're messy, but if you can forgive yourself, if you can, ask for forgiveness, and if you can practice a better day, you don't live in yesterday. You can't get the meal you last ate, the whatever it is, back. So
right.
What you do is you really move forward, and it's okay that you made mistakes, that you said stupid stuff.
Right.
You know, I say stupid stuff. I said stupid stuff at a meeting the other day. And So then I went home and I was lying in bed, and sometime this morning I said, did you really have to say that? And then I said, oh, well, you know, it's out there. It's done.
Well, my other book title that I really should write one day, which I can share with you, is Stupid Shit Sally Lou Loveman Says. Mm-hmm. Anyone can be a speaker. That's my show. That's my title, because I have lists, and it's been since I was a young child, just stupid shit that I say. But it's okay. We're messy.
We're messy.
It's okay.
And it's all right.
It's
and we're
okay.
also fantastic and magnificent. Yes. So
we're
it's
all,
okay.
We're all of those things. I remember very well when we first met that you used to go off to a cabin in the woods. Mm-hmm. And write. Mm-hmm. And I thought, who would want to do that? And now I wish that someone would say, Sally Lou, take my cabin for a week and go write. I mean, that would be my dream vacation, even though I'd be working. Tell me about what that was for you. And do you still allow yourself time to do that?
Well, this is a funny thing that is a story that has a lot to say with maybe the place I was in at that time. So we're talking the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw in a newspaper that I could apply to cottages at Hedgebrook.
Right.
And it was their very first group of people that they would take. And I mentioned that. I'm not bad-mouthing my ex-husband, but I mentioned it. And I think a thought came out versus some thoughts you hold on to. You're never going to get that. You're never going to get in that, because it's six people out of da-da-da. Well, I got in.
Right.
And I had small children, and my mother said she would take care of the children. And so I went to Whidbey Island off of Puget Sound. Yes.
Okay.
And it was just really wonderful. They had six cabins. They were built by the Amish with no nails. You would put your fire at night and it would heat the loft where you slept. By the time the heat ran out and you were cold, you would get up and go to the bathhouse. the people there would bring your lunch like Little Red Riding Hood and set it on the doorstep because they felt you were working, and you'd sit in your window seat and gaze out and you'd write. And then you'd come to a communal dinner with the five other writers, and no one would talk to you when you were walking along because they thought you might be in deep thought.
Right.
And I picked up a staff and I started to walk around with a staff. I thought I was Moses. I let my hair get crazy,
right,
because it was long and big, and
right,
it was Seattle. It was raining all the time. And I met two wonderful women there that are now good friends of mine. And I also started on my first novel there. or worked on it there, and it was later published. And I saw something that your podcast is about, particularly to women, is that when women love other women enough to give out of their generosity to women they don't even know, that come from places they don't even know, that women grow. And so there's a sisterhood there. And so I did that. And now I do that on my own periodically. And when I can't afford to do it, I am the first person that will walk to the door. And if you've called me and it's unannounced, and I'll look out the peephole. And if I'm writing, I will go back and finish what I was doing. I can make what I call a hiatus out of almost anything. And I will get away to write because I know it's a gift that I have. And I think one of the things that we have to do when we understand our gift and our purpose in order to protect it is we have to prioritize based on you do what only you can do. If somebody else can do it, let them do it. If you can afford it, if somebody else can clean your house, let them clean it. You write. If somebody else can do a particular volunteer job that you don't need to do at the time, let them do it. You have to do what you were called to do.
We can't do it all well. Build your team. For me, my team always has been people that do things that I'm not good at. Because when you're good at something and terrible at other things, that's okay. You're allowed to stay in your lane. Doesn't mean you can't get out of your lane and do things that are brave and wonderful and stretch you. But those things, I find that when you're doing something brave, you're doing something brave to remind you to get back to doing what you really do well, even better. So I totally agree with you. And I think for you, you started that process of prioritizing yourself at a very young age with small children. And I've just figured that out. So you are a mentor to me. I know you're a mentor to many. Here's a question. As a Black woman director, how do you take that into your life and use that to help bring up others?
Well, I think you are always, you asked me a question once, like, what would I do if I wasn't doing this? And I would be a teacher. And so,
because you are a teacher.
So this summer I had, I was fortunate to mentor four young women from the Chicago Housing Authority's program, high school program with DePaul, to teach them how to do a documentary in 6 weeks. And we had three teams, so we had 12 people, and I was one of the mentors. And so I was able to work with them on a documentary. I have young people, like I brought a young woman into Harpo, who I had in a church group when she was in high school. And
are we talking about Leslie?
I was going to tell you something about her, but now that you didn't say her name, I won't tell you. But I had to switch Leslie's perspective on managing her emotions. Let's just say that. And at a point, I saw her one Sunday years later at church, and she was in college. And I said, you know, I'm running the internship program at Harpo Radio. And it's too bad that you're in whatever city she was in. And that Monday, she had talked to her instructors and asked, could she get an internship? She was on the phone. And I brought her on as an intern. She did a great job. She went on to work with Steve Harvey. She went on to work Pickler and Ben. And now she's here at the U. She came back to the Chicago area, and she and her daughter were just over Tay-Tay, and I'm doing a dress up day with Tay-Tay. We're going to post pictures.
You're doing the next generation of mentorship.
So I keep young people around me, and I think that this isn't I'm not one of those people that look at all askance at the new generation and young people and go,
they're
I
musts.
Think they're fantastic.
Fantastic.
I think they're creative. I think that there's more good in them than anything.
Oh, my
there's
gosh.
More opportunity there. And they teach me.
Totally.
And I want to be with them, and I want to be with the elders, and I want to be with the young people, and I want to have community.
Right.
So I'm good with that. So I'm always bringing up people. And then there are people that are bringing me up. And there was a time when I couldn't find anybody to bring me up. I felt that Maya Angelou was a mentor in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
And I think we drew each other to each other.
You landed the mother of all mentors.
How did that happen?
Right. Like, are you kidding me? Oh yeah. Maya Angelou. She's my mentor. Like really, like she's my mentor. Like she loved you and
cared
for you. Well,
what happened was when we did, I met Maya Angelou before I came to Oprah Radio. Mm-hmm. I interviewed her for Chicago Public Radio. And then in later years, when I got that job, Oprah said,
which was not an accident,
which was not only not an accident. There were like 300 applicants and I ended up getting the job.
Right.
And then sitting around the round table, nobody else, none of the other producers, there were six of us, wanted Maya Angelou because they were like, oh, my God, she's too close to Oprah. I'd be afraid to have her. She's older. I don't know how to handle her.
Right.
And I said, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've been praying for it.
Right.
So Oprah said,
that is divine.
Right. Absolutely divine. And Oprah said, go to her home with your equipment so she doesn't have to leave the house because she's older.
Right.
And that was just right up my alley because
I've
been around old Black women all my life.
Right.
So then when I got to her home, she said, don't take a hotel, dear. You'll stay with me. There's your room upstairs. Oh. Now, who was going to turn that down?
Nobody.
So 3 to 4 days a month for 4 years, I would be in her home.
Right.
I would ride on her bus with her. She was going somewhere. And I would
be dancing
all the way to Washington, D.C.
I didn't know she liked country music. That's interesting.
I mean, she's open for Martina McBride at her 80th birthday.
Funny.
You had Reba McEntire and the Judds. I mean,
that's so funny.
She's like Brooks and Dunn. When they broke up, she was like
sad.
She was so totally sad.
Well, I want to just, because we're coming to a close and I still have a couple questions that I need to get to. But what I think the coolest thing about mentorship is that it is generational and it always comes back. And you were a mentee, your mentor went on to obviously mentor so many millions of people. But what you've done for Leslie, your mentee, and now what you'll do for her daughter, Taylor, I'm sure is enormous. And what the coolest thing is, and I hope you remember this, is that your mentee went on to work at a television show in Nashville, Pickler and Benn, and my daughter, Carly, became her associate producer.
Isn't that like our generation?
O-M-G.
It's like, how did that happen?
It's not an accident.
It's so not.
So now Leslie is a mentor to Carly. Carly has babysat for Tay-Tay, so that's why I can call her Tay-Tay. And she misses her. And now Carly, this morning, texted me a photo. She is now working with Dawn Norris in New York at Tamron Hall, and Irma Norris was
my
mentor.
Irma,
and Dawn
Irma,
is her
Irma
daughter.
Hired me at one point too at Harpo.
Yep.
So I think that we find ourselves really connected as women, as human beings, but in a special way as women. And we need to make that happen. People
look
at the Gail-Oprah relationship as one of those big ones in the world.
Right.
In the community where I was, my mother had Martha.
My mom had Marianne.
So we've all been doing that, and we've been
good
at
it. Mine is Betsy. Who's yours?
Yeah. Can't say because then they'll all think
they'll
that they're...
They'll get sad. Okay. So we're going to wrap this up so we don't hurt anybody's feelings. Very quickly, don't think long about it at all.
Uh-oh.
Favorite things you love. Okay. Your favorite word that you love.
Love.
Your favorite season that you love?
Fall.
Your favorite TV show that you love?
The Crown.
Your favorite film that you love? Duh. Okay, besides yours.
Oh. I can't pick.
Okay. Favorite band, favorite song, whatever you pick.
James Brown.
Okay. Favorite ice cream?
I don't like ice cream.
What do you like the most to eat? What's your guilty pleasure?
Oh, it's got to be guilty pleasure because, like, I'm always on something. Like, right now, I'm on Brussels sprouts.
Okay. Well, Brussels sprouts. That's not guilty.
All over the world. No, by the time you put hog jaw bacon and different cheeses in them,
then it's
okay?
Guilty. Then it's guilty.
Yeah. Yeah.
What smell reminds you of your purpose?
Flowers.
Oh, I like that. When it's all said and done, what do you want people to remember most about you?
That I love them.
I love you.
I love
thank
you.
Where can we find you?
Okay, so I am Rita Coburn is my Instagram, which I promise to be better at.
Please.
RitaCoburn.com is my website. And if you know me like that, you can join me on Facebook. Yeah.
Okay. Anything you've written a screenplay that's going to come out. We will be seeing your movie in the theater.
Yeah.
And any books or anything that you want to pub?
Well, no, I've got a book that's being shot by the Faith Childs Literary Agency right now called Ella's Deliverance. So it's a manuscript.
Okay.
And I'm working on a book that is my mother's stories. And I'm working on this documentary that we just finished an NEH grant. So we hopefully will have that in May, but I'm working on it now. And pretty soon we'll be able to announce it and I'll put it on the website.
I'm grateful for your mother.
Yeah.
I know I heard so many of her stories when we were working side by side, and I see her in you.
Yeah. She's 96 years old. I'm really very fortunate.
So fortunate. Mm-hmm. And mine is 87.
Wow.
But I see your mom and you, and I'm so grateful. I will just end with this. You are my speaker hero. I am a speaker, but you are my speaker hero. I've seen you speak, but I saw your clip of what you did in Milwaukee at the Martin Luther King celebration. And not only were you smart and funny, you had that audience in the palm of your hands. What do you do? Because I promised our listeners speaker tips. What do you do? What is your secret to engage your audience?
I think it's like doing a story, a documentary, whatever it is. You chase it. You chase it. That means you do the research, you do the work, you pick away the bones of it, you work hard, and you chase it until it starts to chase you. Then when it starts to chase you, you play tag. You keep going for that thing. And there's a little black community saying, it may be everybody saying, how do I know? But it goes good, better, best. I'll never take a rest till my good becomes my better and my better is my best. You have to work really hard. And you have to think about the people that you're going to see, not just what you want to say. You think about that, but you think about the people you're going to see. I'm going to Milwaukee. I'm going to a place where people who already that is largely white, and they already like Martin Luther King, or they wouldn't be coming.
Right.
I need to tell them something new. I need to love them in that moment, and I need to bring them to another level and open their eyes. They think they're liberal, but bias is so pervasive in this society,
yes,
that I need you to see that as liberal as you think you are, you must do more,
right,
because if you don't, none of us grow.
Right.
So you have to work it. You have to work really hard.
I think
and
that's
then
one
after
the...
you go over it and go over it, then you have the confidence to let it flow.
Right. It's in your, literally in your bones.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't not speak it because it's in your bones. It's in
right,
your blood.
By that time, you're,
and you
you're
just,
gone.
I find like I just open that vessel and I'm like, okay, fill it up, fill it up, fill it up.
Yeah.
So I thank you. Your love speaks. I thank you so
you.
Much. And just thank you for being here with me today. Thank you, Rita Coburn, my first guest on the Love Speaks series, where a little bit of love goes a long way.
Thank you, Lulu.
Love you. I have loved speaking with you today, and I want to speak with you more. So follow me on all of my social platforms at Live Love Speaks on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you want more stories like the stories we speak here on the Love Speaks series podcast, go to lovespeaks.com and pick up a copy of my new book, Speak. Love your story, your audience is waiting to step up your speaking game and your human game. Check out my blog while you're there.
Sally Lou Loveman is a mom, speaker, author, former audience producer for The Oprah Winfrey Show, and founder of Love Speaks. Each week, Sally Lou and her crew have a conversation about how love speaks in their lives and how it can speak in yours. From kindness to composting, no topic is off limits. If you need a community to kickstart your heart, you need the Love Speaks series.
Thanks for listening. Your love speaks.